I'm delighted to welcome into the studio a genuine real-life professor, one Angus Dalgleish. Angus is a professor of oncology at St George's Hospital in London. He's a fellow of the Academy of Medical Sciences, a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians, and a Royal College of Pathologists. You're a fellow of so many things. How do you find any time to work, Angus? great to have you with us. Thank you so much indeed. And obviously, you've been involved in oncology for decades, I guess. And we want to sort of talk about what Angus, as a professor, is seeing in his daily treatments. And, you know, I'm vaccinated, I'm pro-vaccines, I've been boosted. And, you know, I believe that we've got to keep reviewing the data so that we learn from what works and what the data as it emerges and what doesn't work. Because if we do that, then actually we can stop misinformation abounding, we can stop conspiracy theories. But ultimately, what I think is really important is we've got these excess deaths occurring. The government's got to look at this. My aim is that government should have an independent review of excess deaths and their concerns so that they can we can get to the bottom of this stuff and really, really understand it. Because I had Andrew Bridgen on just before Christmas. He's got some concerns that was talked about. The government is absolutely robust that it considers the vaccine safe and effective, and the British Heart Foundation absolutely robustly objects to the concerns that was raised by Andrew Bridgen. And in a sense, but we've got to look at the data. Let's look at what's emerging. What are the benefits? What are the potential risks of anything we do in medical purposes? And obviously, your specialism, Angus, is cancer treatments. It's oncology, and you're seeing patients all the time. And I'm just fascinated what you're seeing and what you think we may need to be looking at in terms of data that's emerging.
Well, thank you very much. I'm an oncologist, but I have done an awful lot of work developing vaccines for HIV and cancer, so I know the basics of this very, very well indeed. So I also have an instinct that sometimes you can over-treat and you can over-vaccinate. And my concerns have been due to the fact that a couple of my friends have had heart issues following their vaccines. I mean, they're ordinary vaccines. And that, whatever they say, is recognised now, the link. Especially the younger you are, actually, the worse it is, and the myocarditis, etc. And it is recognised.
Which is one of the recognised sort of side effects.
Absolutely recognised, yeah. Indeed. So what I then became concerned about was that I've been seeing some melanoma patients. That's what my main specialty is. So I've been seeing long-term follow-up on my melanoma patients. And some of these we treated 10, 20 years ago at a time when they were be lucky to survive 2 years, for instance.
Wow.
And we pioneered immunotherapy for these patients. We actually had the first cancer vaccines given in the country. And some of these patients now are doing 10, 20 years without any relapse, which is fantastic and very satisfying to
them.
Amazing. But I have noted that we're starting to see relapses in these people. And you ask, why have they suddenly got a relapse after all this time? Well, there's some usual measures. If you undergo severe stress and you've got something, big crisis in your life, or divorce or bankruptcy or something, that does lead. And
sure.
We know that your level of depression or anxiety reduces your immune response. That's well known.
Right.
But I couldn't find that. I found that before in a couple of patients over the many, many years. But we couldn't find it. But what I had found, the one thing they all had in common, they'd all had a booster, either their first or the second booster. So basically,
so these are sort of more elderly cancer patients,
and some younger ones too. Younger. Yes, it's highly unusual. And so I basically started to ask, is there any link with it? And we monitor it, and there's at least over half a dozen of melanoma patients who've relapsed, who it's linked very closely to the booster. And I point out, it didn't happen with the first and second vaccines. It's the booster we're seeing. So I then became aware of people who call me to say that they were unwell after a booster. And when we looked into that very carefully, we felt that they are unwell. I don't know what's going on. We've got to investigate.
Yes.
And found that they've had a B-cell malignancy, a lymphoma. And this is really quite remarkable, because they were able to say they started to feel ill after the booster. So what I cannot stand idly by and ignore this association. So I have actually flagged it up. And to my amazement, I've had other oncologists who've contacted me and said, we're seeing exactly the same thing. Not only in the UK, but I worked in Australia a long time. I've had an Australian colleague call me and say they've seen exactly the same thing. So I feel an obligation to point this out. Now, we've been talking about, the increase in deaths, excess deaths. These people are not featuring on those yet, because they're just getting a relapse or early. So they won't be on the excess deaths. So what we need to do now is a sort of a red flag. What is going on here? Now, having studied vaccinology and developed vaccines for over 25 years, and I'm principal of the Institute of Cancer Vaccines and Immunotherapy, so it's a very formal organisation.
Sure.
We became aware that you can do come to situations where two vaccines are good, and then the boosters actually don't do any good at all and can end up being harmful.
So this is fascinating, because that actually, it gets incredibly technical, doesn't it?
Where
you're talking about the first two vaccines could be good, and certainly I know in Denmark, which is now not vaccinating people under the age of 50 except in certain conditions, and one of those is if you're a cancer patient, in which case they're still recommending vaccines.
Well, I know where they're coming from, because they're labelled as people at risk and therefore needing extra work. But
yes.
Ironically, they might not be doing them any favours at all by doing it relative to what I'm seeing. And we have models where two vaccines are good and four vaccines awful.
Mm.
And they do exist there. And my knowing that, my flag is, are we seeing that with this COVID vaccine?
So that's this whole point about what I touched on in my sermon, which is, We've got to keep looking at the emerging data.
Yes.
To see what it tells us. Because in a sense, there are consequences which will be good and bad. But when you get into the question of how many vaccines, so one or two may be very good for a cancer patient, but then you might have too much of it's a bit like going on a night out. You can have too much of a good thing.
Well, exactly. But there's a logic to be very wary about the booster program. I believe it was done without any thought, on the grounds that, oh, the antibodies are waning, we must give some more, keep the antibodies up. But when you're dealing with viruses, especially that cause upper respiratory tract infection, it's not the antibodies that are that important. It is the T cell and the innate T cell response. And what I've been surprised to see is that it's already in the literature that your third or fourth messenger RNA vaccine can actually suppress the T cell response. So that is one particular concern that we have, because there's a science to explain what we're seeing. And more recently, there's been a paper in Science Immunology brand, which says that the first two vaccines induce, I don't want to be too technical here, but IgG1 and 3, and they're good. But the booster boosts a thing called IgG4, which actually is an anti-inflammatory. So we've got two strands of science that say, whoa, I think we should be very, very careful here, because I've said before that why do you want to boost against a virus that no longer exists?
So the government, obviously, they're very clear and very robust that the vaccines are safe and effective. And in a sense, for the vast, vast, vast majority of people, that data is there. That's not a doubt. And the vast, vast majority of scientists and medics and doctors also completely agree with that. But what we're talking about is very specific for very specific people with very specific conditions. Mm. You've got to keep looking. It's like the unintended consequences of certain actions.
It is.
And that's the point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And that the data's emerging. And this is so hard, because even just this week, there's a new, was announced 2 days ago, I think it was, that the government's just signed a new trial with BioNTech for targeted vaccines using the mRNA technology to help target specific cancers.
Yes, I know they have, and I read that. And, I mean, I've been doing cancer vaccines for well over 20, 25 years, and targeting certain cancers with certain antigens, actually, I'll be very honest here, it's actually not been a great success.
Right.
Because you target the tumour with a vaccine targeting the antigen.
Like a sort of hammer.
And the tumour goes, ooh, I'm under attack here, so it down-regulates the antigen, so it carries on,
right?
No longer a target. So obviously the thing to do is you have to use more than one antigen, and that's the type of approach they're using. But I personally, if they had asked me, I wouldn't be rushing in with the messenger RNA technology at all, because I don't think it is, and this goes even more so for COVID, I don't think it's mature enough. Now, right. People say, and I've had...
But it's a trial they've announced, isn't it?
It's a trial, nevertheless, yes.
So in a sense, that's how you progress, by doing the
trial.
That's
how you progress. But people say, you know, I'm an oncologist, I don't know what I'm talking about, and a lot of the people near the advisors just shoo me off like that. But, you know, I must be one of the very few people who sat on a scientific advisory board for a company whose logo is the messenger RNA company. And that was, I left 5 years ago when it merged with, changed its spots, as it were. But I knew then it's far more complex to messenger RNA than we're being led to believe it is. And I think we've got to be very, very cautious. And I would point out that the inventor, the guy who stands to gain the most from this, Robert Malone, he's basically said we should halt too. Now, it's very, very rare that people say stop doing something when they're financially gaining from it.
It all comes back to the data. There's a sort of general difficult question on the other side of this, which I'm going to ask, and I think it'll upset lots of listeners and viewers, and you might find it upsetting as well. But in a sense, when you go to war, you know that sadly there are going to be casualties, but there's a target, but you know, unfortunately, there will be casualties along the way, but that's considered acceptable. So I guess, for political leaders, I mean, COVID essentially has been like a war. Mm-hmm. It's been a battle, and lots of people have used that terminology. Is it a legitimate view for a political leader to say, actually, we knew that there would be some casualties along the way in fighting the COVID war, but for the greater good, we had to do it?
That is the position that will be taken. But I can accept that. I mean, right at the beginning, I was behind what we were doing. But also, I feel that once the facts change, you should change your mind and you should change your position. COVID is no longer, the COVID we are vaccinating with those boosters is no longer on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. It's Omicron.
Because we've got the different
it's
variants.
It's now Omicron. 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you try to do 2, yeah. 1 and 2, it'll be gone. There's 3 and 4. And the good news about this is now a pussycat virus compared to
fingers crossed
flu.
And obviously they keep tweaking the vaccines, I guess, technology, yep, in order to try and catch up with the variants, which,
yes,
will keep varying.
Yes, but it's never going to be.
It's always a process of catch up.
It's always going to be at one step.
I guess you've always got to keep trying, and you don't know which way it's going to go. But it is really fascinating, though, the sort of the different specifics. I know, for example, that the US, the National Institute of Health, has looked at the increase of Guillain-Barr syndrome, a tiny increase there. Yes. So you've just got to keep looking at the data. Mm. And keep learning from it.
Yes. Transverse myelitis, which is, I think you're referring to, one of the things like Guillain-Barre, is again accepted as a side effect of the vaccine program, and is also on the MHRA website as reported things. But the idea is that they're all very low. But the issue that I have is there comes a time, and if the disease which you are vaccinating against doesn't exist and you've got a significant side effect profile, you should say stop, take stock, because it was very, very few cases of transverse myelitis that stopped the swine flu vaccine.
Obviously, COVID exists and will exist for God knows how long, for yonks and yonks, and it's a case of just keep learning from it and keep adapting to the different variants. and adjusting and keep learning from the data. I mean, that's really the key. The data emerges and we've just got to keep doing the best we can.
Well, I think we do. I think it needs to be very active. I think when red flags are raised, there needs to be an active surveillance instead of saying, I see nothing here.
Yeah. And what you're doing is quite rightly, with your specific expertise and specialism, you're seeing something that anecdotally causes you a concern, so you're quite rightly raising a red flag. Angus, absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in to talk about this. Some of this stuff is important. We've got to keep looking at the data, keep looking at what emerges, and then we can learn from it. We say, well, look, what needs tweaking, what needs learning from, what needs changing? That's really important. Angus Dalglish, thank you so much, and for all your expertise and work that you do in the world of oncology. We really do appreciate it. Keep those calls coming in, folks. 0344 499 1000. Text us 87222 using the word talk, otherwise it'll disappear somewhere else. Tweet us at TalkTV.
Talk Radio and TalkTV. Industry stalwart and respected news hound. Ernest Talk. Ian Collins. Warning. Common sense ahead.
Ian Collins.
Weekday afternoons from 1. Be informed. Be very informed. On the app, on your smart speaker, Talk Radio and Talk TV.